Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, my good buddy, producer extraordinaire, and Christmas enthusiast, Cameron McCoy. Indeed. How you doing, friend?
Good, man. I mean, like, Christmas is here. It's Eve, and celebrating it with my buddy. It's great. Yeah.
Eve squared. Which, you know, what better thing to do? We could be spending time with our families. We could be thinking about gifts that we're going to give. We could think about the real reason for the season, which, of course, is hopping on a train in the middle of the night and going to get a present. We didn't actually talk about on the air how much I hate Polar Express, but that's another show.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
but no, we're spending time talking about Magic the Gathering because we love it probably too much. Cameron, Ravnica Allegiance spoilers are, we'll say, pouring in.
They're upon us for sure.
And we're going to talk about several in our middle segment, but first we're going to talk about what we've been doing this week, and you have big news.
Big news. Played more Arena. Yeah. No, so I, for the first time in a long time, was able to play Legacy in paper, and it was great. And it was also a Christmas miracle. Mm-hmm. Because somehow I was able to go undefeated in this and go 4-0 and take down the tournament, which in my Legacy scene has never happened. So I was really, really happy with how it all went down. So,
Cameron, if you could just slow down because our audience is collectively doing a spit take.
Sorry, yeah. Yeah.
So
Cameron won.
So we've been doing this show for 5 years, which means you've been playing Legacy for like three and a half.
Three and a half, yeah.
How did your opponents take it when you beat them? Were they okay?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we've always pointed out, they're all children, you know. So no. It was actually it was great. So like opponents were great. You know, I didn't. I wasn't a sore winner, we'll say. You know, I didn't do like the NFL dance at the end of the end zone or anything like that.
The NFL dance? Oh, that one.
You know what I'm talking about. The NFL dance.
Oh, Cameron. Oh, anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, I played Blue-White Delver Stoneblade. This is a list that has, you see it every once in a while on MTGO. And I just took a stock list on Friday night and kind of built it up. And so it's running, you know, Delver and Stoneforge Mystic, True Name Nemesis. Those are that's your creature package with a couple Snapcasters just for utility. And then, I mean, like the deck is playing 4 Force of Will, 4 Dazes, 3 Spell Pierces, and 1 Stifle. So it is heavy on the counter spells. And then you're running Wastelands as well, and it's funny because like every other Stoneblade list I've ever played, if I ever play against a control opponent or against a Delver opponent, I felt like they could always outvalue me. Like I would play something, I would have a counterspell, but they would have one more counterspell against me, right? Or I would get rid of one of their creatures, and they could just grind away with just another creature, right? This Blue-White Delver Blade list is interesting in the fact that it just feels resilient and more, I just have more options. And I mean, like, I just felt like I always had the answers and my card draw was like really, really good. But like, there's just multiple instances where like I would force a will, they would force a will. And then I just had like that day's backup, and just those two things in combination are huge. I can't get over just how huge it is. I think I've just undervalued, I mean, days is obviously very, very good, but I think I've undervalued it over the course of the last 3 years. It's good. It's really, really good. Especially you can catch your opponent with their pants down. Right. So,
yeah. Well, and the card that you've had in common over that time frame is Deathrite Shaman, which made days a lot worse.
Sure, yeah.
And so now that he's gone, I think Daze and Spell Pierce are really uniquely positioned in the format.
I agree. So anyway, went 4-0. I played against the Mayhem Legacy meta, which is just kind of bonkers and off, you know, it does crazy things and I love it. Mayhem being my card shop. But anyway, I played against Blue-Black Artifact Prison, Santa's Little Elves, Blue Black Control, and Burn. So, like, I mean, that was the matchups I had, and just my card draw and everything just kind of played out pretty well. I will say, like, this list, I've really come to, I don't like playing Delver. I play Delver because it's the card that will help you win games, but I really dislike the card. I really dislike playing with that card. And if I had to play this on like a weekly basis, or if I was grinding in a tournament, I don't think I would want to be playing this deck. Even though it seems pretty good, there's just something about Delver, and it's just so vanilla and straightforward and just not my thing. So that's just something. I wish I liked the deck, but it's really just not my thing.
Okay. But it helped you win.
It helped me win, so I have to like it.
Well, I would like it because of that. But, you know, hey, teach his own, Cameron. So for me, this week was spent largely on Arena. I do want to mention this best of one talk. We got into it last week. I mean, it's kind of a week old thing at this point. But I'm not hearing very compelling reasons why. So just to make this clear, the competitive ladder to like ladder up in Arena, which is going to be the avenue to play at higher level events, will be best of one, not best of three. And the argument that I'm constantly hearing is, well, it's better for casual players and or it's better for speed and time and it's more popular. And I don't really buy any of these arguments. And I pointed out on Twitter, like, how many of these games that are other esports are best of three or best of five or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you would do the ladder initially as best of one and then make the high level competitive tournaments best of three with sideboard just rings really false to me. I feel like you need to be consistent, right, as a whole. And if you're looking to weed out people, sideboarded games are just as good as non-sideboarded games to do that. When people say, oh, it's faster, it's blah, 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 there's no difference. Like, you're still sitting and playing a game of Magic.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, if you're a viewer and you're watching best of one versus best of three, you're still watching the same experience, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, can I just jump in with, like,
yeah, please.
The metagame would also just shift from like what the paper metagame is to what the arena metagame. And it's weird to think that you would have almost two standards in the future, because decks really can be like, I'm a game one type of deck or I'm a game two type of deck. And it just seems like that divergence would prove to be troublesome, I guess, in my opinion, but I don't know. It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So Street Fighter, even on ladder matches, it's three rounds. Yes, it is faster, right? But the Street Fighter community realizes that there's some level of variance, and this, we're talking about much less variance than you would experience in a card game, right? Mm-hmm. Much less. But still, people want to have a best of three, and that's just become the norm. But every kind of offhanded comment I hear about, well, it's more casual friendly, it's easier for people to understand, I just think it rings false. And the idea that it's somehow, like League of Legends and Dota and stuff, those matches last like 45 minutes, guys. They are definitely longer than almost every match of Magic. And the idea that it would be healthier for the game, I just think that people, oh, it's the future, it's what's going to happen. Why? What's the logical reason for that? Why do we have to have best of one? I mean, look, if there's best of one in ranked play and that's what I got to play, that's what I'm going to do. But just the open and shut nature that people have of this discussion of that it's better, I definitely don't see. Mm. And I think sideboarded matches provide nuance. They provide a skill ceiling. There's something to think about. It also, on the content side, helps people because there's a lot to write about in terms of sideboard. And it's not this idea that it's difficult for a casual person to understand. How? Hey, man, you got 15 cards that you can't play with in game one. You can swap them out for other cards to help the matchup. Oh, cool. Right? Like,
yeah.
It is not a calculus problem. So, anyway, Jumped in. I'm playing Jeskai Control again and just messing around with the different variations. Most versions of it have gone to some number of Settle the Wreckages in it. And yeah, it's fine. I mean, I've got off blue-black a couple weeks ago because while I was having fun with that deck, I wasn't seeing the win percentage that I was with Jeskai. I just feel like with Jeskai, I'm much more comfortable with the game plan. And look, I just want to be playing Teferi. I don't think that's too much to ask, right? But just really been enjoying Arena, really ready for new cards to enter. And with Ravnica Allegiance, I haven't decided yet, but I think I'm going to draft more just to kind of get that experience. Like Best of One, I'm not the biggest fan in the world of draft bots, and I'm really ready for them to have live drafts, and I'm willing to pay a premium for that.
Sure.
But I feel like with the draft bots, I want to start on the ground floor so I kind of understand where the meta is headed. I feel like if I jump into Guilds of Ravnica draft on Arena now, I'll kind of not know the tricks to drafting the bots, and that's a little tough. So anyway, Cameron, let's talk about Ravnica Allegiance. Ravnica colon Allegiance. Let's get out of this segment. We'll be right back. So, Cameron, really quickly, we're going to have a shorter middle segment today because we're just going through some spoilers. Ravnica Allegiance has got the five remaining guilds in it. And a lot like they did with last time with Ravnica. And there's some, we'll say, meaty cards here. There's a lot to kind of explore within the card text and mechanics. We're not going to do a mechanics breakdown. But why don't you start us off? What card did you want to talk about?
Yeah, so first and foremost, we have Bedevil. It is a instant that costs a black and a red. Destroy target artifact, creature, or planeswalker. So, I mean, it's a hero's downfall for Ratkos, and you get to destroy an artifact as well, which is pretty huge. So kind of like an upgrade or something like that. Mm. The utility of something like this, I think, is really, really good. I don't know how important artifacts are going to be, you know, in the next iteration of a meta. But, I mean, the idea of just being able to kill a Teferi or a Doom Whisperer is pretty good. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, so this is the card that I think is the poster child for the power creep in Modern, because I feel like if we were talking about this card 3 years ago, we'd be like, Modern playable. Yeah. And now it's like, you know, Culligan's Command is on the outside looking in Modern. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And this card isn't that. So this card is really good. It's going to be, if there is a black-red deck, which it's looking like Jund is going to be a thing, just based upon kind of the cards that we're seeing. Maybe, maybe not. But the Jundian-style cards are there. And Bedevil is a fantastic, you mentioned Teferi. That seems like thing number one. Before their untap trigger goes on the stack or while it's on the stack, you're going to Bedevil their Teferi. It seems like a really nice safety valve card and a very, very, very strong role player. You know, Hero's Downfall was a four of. However, that was also at a time where you could kind of make, you know, black work. This mana cost is much more restrictive. Now, I should also point out, Rakdos decks, just like straight black-red, don't tend to exist very often. Usually it's red, little black, or black, little red, or Grixis, or whatever. And so we might not be able to see the forest through the trees here and see that, okay, there is going to be a straight, you know, 10 black sources, 10 red sources, black-red Rakdos deck. I mean, can you think of a single one that you've seen in Standard?
Never. I'm trying to think of even, like, in the starter decks, is there one? I can't remember. I don't think so. It's a weird color combination. You never see those two together. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's always just like, oh, they're splashing it for one or the other. And I think it's just those colors tend to be so demanding. But, look, this card is also be a cube all-star. I mean, you're just going to see it.
Yeah, it's great, yeah.
The color combination is awkward for Legacy, by the way, so I don't think you're going to see it in that format. But let's talk about the one that we're going to dig into the most here, I think. There's so much to say about this. It's Lavinia, Azorius Renegade. And there's so much to chew on here. It's a blue and a white for a legendary human soldier. All you soldier fans out there. Each opponent can't cast non-creature spells with converted mana costs greater than the number of lands that player controls. Whenever an opponent casts a spell, if no mana was cast to spend it, if no mana was spent to cast it, counter that spell. Okay. So, lots going on here. I just want to get this out of the way. I don't know where this is going to be played in Standard. I just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe we're missing something there, but Standard just seems like the non-location for it, unless it's a hate card for future free spells, which is concerning on multiple levels. But Modern, Legacy, Vintage, I think, is where this card lives. Hey, Cameron, you're the Legacy expert on the show now that you've gone 4-0. What do you think of this?
Yeah, it's like a weird Gaddick Teague. You know, in some ways. So I don't know where it lives. If it is kind of like a... Every once in a while you'll see a blue-white weenie sort of deck, right? That's running Thalia, and it's essentially Death and Taxes, but they're splashing blue for certain things. I could maybe see that in that sort of deck, just because it's a good hate card. I mean, it's a good way to shut down a number of things that, like, a show-and-tell opponent is doing or something like that, you know? So, yeah, I think I like this card. It's strange, though.
So, let me put this out there to you. I think you're going to play this in Miracles. I think you're going to play it in... I mean, I guess the Blue-White Delver deck. So, first of all, Modern, this is easy. You're just going to play it in Humans. Who cares?
Oh, yeah. Blah. Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, you might play it in Blue-White Control as well. However, it's weird in what it does and doesn't shut down. So, in Modern, it affects Storm, but not, like, super well. Not in the same way that something like Meddling Mage or... I mean, maybe it's better than Thalia against those decks. And there's some other kind of weird corner casey things. But they have to cast it. So, things like Show and Tell and Through the Breach, they still work.
Okay.
So, on that level, it's strange.
Okay, yeah.
But with Legacy, there's all this weird thing. So it shuts off your opponent's dazes and forces because they spit. Well, unless they pay mana for those things.
Mm-hmm.
But they just counter those. Anything that's alternative cast. Probe is banned now, so that kind of is nothing. But when you play this against a Storm opponent, and I'm not saying this is the best Storm hate card, but they can't cast Lion's Eye Diamond. They can't cast Lotus Petal. They can't ritual up into an ad nauseum or ritual. Like,
okay, yeah.
So, like, there's all these, like, weird corner casey things, but the thing that I like as a Miracles player is I play this. It doesn't shut off my Force of Wills, but it shuts off yours. And so that's super intriguing in the control mirror. Like, there's no shortage of cards that are good against Storm for Miracles to play with. There's no shortage, you know. So I think it's in your 75 in Miracles. I don't know if it's a main deckable card, but there's, you can come up with a lot of different Legacy decks that this creates problems for. And it breaks the mirror wide open. Like, if you side into this and they've sided out of their Terminus and Swords, oh boy, like, I don't know what they can do. Right, like, shutting off their forces is a huge deal in that matchup, and this puts pressure on them, right? Like, it attacks them. You just got to make sure you don't attack it into a Snapcaster Mage. So, Vintage is also, like, the Vintage community lost their minds with this.
I bet,
and I don't know. I guess you would play it in Mentor. It's probably pretty good, but past that, I don't know. Like, it shuts off Mental Misstep, which is a weird thing. But with Modern, like, we could say, oh, it would see play in control, blah, 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 but I don't know.
Yeah. What control deck? Yeah. I guess, yeah, there's certain things maybe where this is doing its thing, but Yeah, I mean, you're going to be putting in humans. That's about that's about as all as I can think of. So,
boy, what a weird metagame that thing
strange,
is.
Strange, yeah, yeah.
All right, Cameron, what's our next card?
Next we have Gruul Spellbreaker. It's a 1 red and a green for a ogre warrior, 3/3 power and toughness. It has riot. This creature enters the battlefield with your choice of a +1/+1 counter or haste. It has trample. As long as it's your turn, you and Gruul Spellbreaker have hexproof. So, yeah, man, this seems great. I mean, I like this against, like, maybe against a burn opponent or something like that. Just, you know, anything where, like, somebody's trying to, like, maybe get you on their end step. Just having that hexproof is great. I mean, it's also just, like, a really good beater card. Like, I mean, having that option of just trample with 4/4 or I just need to get through with another 3 damage. There it is. So, it just seems like a really good utility card for like some maybe red-green aggro deck. Yeah, I like it. I like it.
This card is a card that will kill you often.
Yeah.
Like, 3-mana 3/3 haste is pretty okay. Not amazing, but okay. And the fact that you have that option... And the fact that it already has trample, so it's not very chumpable. Like, this is the engine by which green-red will work.
Yeah.
And trample is going to be super important for that deck because the white decks are so good at clogging up the ground. You know, green-white's kind of already had its shot. It's a deck. It works. It's effective. But what's weird is usually when you have a green-red aggressive deck or a red-white aggressive deck, the white-green decks tend to be the foil. Meaning they have beefier dudes, lifelink dudes, that color combination tends to shut these things down. Well, now they're faced with this challenge of making green-red decks that are able to get through what they've made with the green-white stuff. And trample is pretty much the best way to deal with that. And so I think you're going to look at this and you're going to say, okay, well, riot's interesting and the hexproof is interesting. I think the thing that matters on this card is trample. I think there's going to be multiple times where trample is going to really hit you. Now, in past Ravnica, we had a card that was similar in its diversity in Gorklan Rampager. Remember that card?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And while I think this card is not quite as good as that one, because Gorklan Rampager could have just killed people out of clean nowhere, this is a similar power curve kind of card. And I think it's really good. And so, yeah. If they print a couple more on this like power level, green red X or green red is just going to be very, very good.
Totally.
You know, imagine this and then Legion War Boss is your 3 drops. You know, that's pretty okay. Mm-hmm. It's pretty okay. Speaking of not okay, I want to talk about emergency powers. Now, look, I fully recognize this is a casual card. But this gives us an avenue by which to talk about the blue-white mechanic. It's called Emergency Powers. It's 5, a white and a blue, so 7 CMC. For an instant, each player shuffles their hand and graveyard into their library, then draws 7 cards, and then you exile Emergency Powers. And it says, addendum, if you cast a spell during your main phase, you may put a permanent card with converted mana cost 7 or less from your hand onto the battlefield. Typically, cards like this don't see standard play unless you're doing something kind of busted. And so this card just seems like mythic casual fun, maybe an EDH card or something like that. I don't think it's going to see standard play. But there's a 4-mana draw 2 that is an instant that you know, you gain life if you hit the addendum. What do you think of this effect, Cameron?
It seems like an added benefit. I mean...
An addendum, as it were?
An addendum, right? Yeah. How applicable it will be, yeah, in actual, like, tournament-level gameplay, I don't know. Because it does seem like it has, like, casual all over it. Like, this total... Like, this thing seems like... What was the Will of the Council or whatever that was called in...
Conspiracy.
Whatever, idiot. Yeah, in Conspiracy, right? So it just feels very similar to that. Not bad, just, like... I need to see other cards that are going to have this addendum to it, but it just seems like, hey, cool, this might be great. And then, you know, maybe in Legacy, there's like some sort of combo with this, which very well could be, where it's like, holy cow, this is amazing. So, yeah, that there you go. Blue white has its mechanic.
Yeah, and like in the past, the mechanics haven't mattered, but this mechanic does certainly feel like they had a meeting. They were like, guys, Teferi, real good. Let's make a mechanic that kind of works with him, but is not too busted. Because, you know, like Teferi's untap ability does mean like you can play something during your main phase and, you know, whatever. And then sometimes you're going to get these benefits, like the 4-mana one. Well, you might be at 8-mana and it doesn't matter that you're doing it on your main phase, you know. But when you look at the cards that have been spoiled, especially for green-red, and then you look at this, you're just like, doesn't seem so interesting. That being said, I don't know that blue-white needs a ton more than Hallowed Fountain. You know, it feels like once you have Hallowed Fountain, those decks are pretty well set. Yeah, and, yeah, I mean, we'll see. But really, blue-white just needs, in my estimation, a good 1-2 mana removal spell. That is the thing mm-hmm. that it is currently missing. It has, you know, Chemist's Insight to draw. It has mm-hmm. two different Wrath effects. It has its Planeswalker. It has all these different things that it can do, but kill things. Really, it just needs that 2-mana, you know, the Azorius Charm effect kind of thing. And
it needs a Swords to Plowshares, is what you're saying.
Really, if we could just get Supreme Verdict.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
A good and fair card.
The glory days, yeah.
Yeah. No, I will maintain that era of control was the easiest control deck to play ever because of Sphinx's Rev. Like, there was never a decision whether you should or should not Sphinx's Rev whenever it was time. Like,
yeah.
Do I gain 5 and draw 5? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, like... Yeah. But the play of that deck was pretty consistently Verdict, Sphinx's Rev, Elspeth,
yeah.
And then off Man. And off. Yeah. And then there was that, you know, counterspell with Scry. Like, it was just either they killed you before you got to that or you were really not dead, you know? Anyway, so Cameron, so far Ravnica Allegiance is really intriguing. I'm hoping that while the metagame, I think, is really healthy, that some kind of mid-range green strategies get pushed, and it looks like we're headed in that direction. What do you think so far?
Yeah, overall, it looks like it's a good complement to the current Ravnica that we have. And, yeah, I'm, like you, excited to have some of these cards in the wild, just because it is so easy sometimes to just kind of grind away and forget, like, that there's other decks that can exist in Arena, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm ready for that. I'm ready for more cards in the wild.
Right on. Okay, so let's get out of the segment, come back, and talk about what else we've been doing this week. So, Cameron, I want to hear... I feel bad because we can't go full spoiler with this review. I'm actually watching Into the Spider-Verse in like a couple days. I talked the family into seeing that over Mary Poppins Returns or whatever.
I think that's a good option. At least for you and your daughter, honestly. Yeah, she's going to love this.
So, talk to me about Into the Spider-Verse.
Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse. It is the latest Spider-Man movie from Sony Pictures, and it is an animated feature that is produced and written by Chris Lord, one of the guys who did like the Lego movie, which is up there for me as far as like one of those fun, super awesome movies that I've just thoroughly enjoyed. So Into the Spider-Verse is great. Like, it is so much fun. The three main characters, which are old Peter Parker, Miles Morales, and Spider-Gwen, really are well-developed characters, and like their interactions and how they have to work together is so good. This is like just reading the best comic, you know. It's just like a page turner. You can go through it. The story just it's great. I think it does such a good job of developing Miles as a unique character who, yes, is a Spider-Man, but is just a completely different person than who Peter Parker is. and his motivations for being Spider-Man are completely different, and they work. And I really, really, really appreciate that. The animation style in this is stylish. It actually throws me off at first because it's like missing frames, so it's like a little jittery. But like everything has like almost looks like a new, like an old school newsprint look when it's like super close ups. So you can kind of see like this weird.
Like a Lichtenstein painting kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So there's like texture and detail in the animation that is just so beautiful. So, so good. Like it's just stylish. The action's great. The motivation's all there. Overall, like I'm waxing poetic about this movie. I think it is super fun. It's a great family film, and definitely one of the funnest movie experiences I've had in a long while. So like overall, like I don't think you can go wrong going to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Just go see it. Like there's parts like that didn't fully work for me. Like I thought like sometimes in the story, like it was jarring where they clearly had to like suck out something for time, you know, and mm-hmm. It's like, wait, how did we get here? But overall, like the plot still worked.
Yeah, and I'm really excited for Miles Morales to be put out there, because I just think he is such an exceptional character, and really one of the bright spots of Marvel Comics in the last whatever it's been 15 years.
Yeah,
because not to go on too much of a tangent, but the problem that they've kind of gotten to with Peter Parker is as they've aged him up, he's kind of lost some of his pathos and lost some of what makes him intriguing. And really more recently, they've made him like a tech industry giant. And to me, that really extracts out what makes the character special.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea that Spider-Man doesn't have to struggle to pay the bills doesn't connect with me. Like,
yeah.
The whole idea is that he's the everyman, and Miles gets back in touch with that, and I've always find that kind of a litmus test. There's certain things where people will say stuff and it makes me not take them very seriously. For example, when they say Pat Mahomes should not be the NFL MVP, I stop listening to anything else they
tell me
say.
About it, man. I agree. Totally.
15 more touchdowns. 15 more touchdowns, yeah, than the nearest quarterback. You got to be kidding me. But like when people say, "Oh, I don't like Miles Morales," and I mean. The next obvious question is, have you read any comics featuring Miles Morales? And the answer is always no.
Yeah.
And they say, Peter Parker, Spider-Man. It's like, look, man, this is not – it's okay to have another character with these powers. Nobody gets mad that there's War Machine and Iron Man. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a weird but anyway, I really emotionally connect with that character. Like, I love him so much. So I'm really excited to see it at that level. I do want to talk about Teen Titans, because that season concluded on DCU. Mm-hmm. And boy, what a roller coaster. Some episodes were really great, and then, I mean, it just kind of dips and ups and downs and all this. Where I feel like the CW DC, the Arrowverse, as they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
For better or for worse, is very consistent. Like, when you watch an episode of Supergirl, you are getting an episode of Supergirl. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. They've really got like down what they are doing. Whereas with Titans, it kind of felt like there was this kind of tonal all over the place thing happening. And the season finale, I thought, while interesting, struggled to kind of execute on its dramatic stuff. It's a lot about Dick Grayson, and Dick Grayson's, he's not Nightwing yet, but his journey to become Nightwing, which to my understanding has never been told in live action.
Yeah.
And so to do that and also treat Robin like a character that's actually a physically imposing character, which I don't think has also ever been done in live action, is pretty interesting. And the way that they handle Raven, I thought was great. And Starfire, I thought the actress that plays Starfire does a great job. But then there's just these weird plot things that I think don't connect and kind of indicate that it was rushed. But still worth watching if you get a chance. Lastly, Cameron, I want to talk about a video game.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So this is, as you know, I just kind of churn and burn through video games, but now I'm on vacation, so I wanted something that was multiplayer shooter, and you've been playing Battlefield, and your off-the-cuff review of Battlefield did not get me super excited, right?
Do you have friends? That's the question.
Oh no, who has friends? What's a friend, right? I have a producer, Cameron, and that's like that's like having a force friend.
Yeah.
And I did play the beta Battlefield. So Call of Duty was on sale for $40. Battlefield was on sale for $30, and I ended up buying Call of Duty. I haven't played a Call of Duty since Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. I have lots of, like, I'm not that into it. We'll just say that. I really respected Call of Duty 4, and Titanfall does have some of that DNA. It really does. But just the overall look, feel of Call of Duty, and the way it plays, which it's like super high skill ceiling, and it's really all about the time that you spend on it, memorizing maps, knowing your perks, you know, understand, like, all those things really don't appeal to me. And the reason that I picked it up is I really wanted to play a PUBG-like experience. The reviews for what they call, it's called Blackout, but it is the Hunger Games type experience that's been very popularized by PUBG and Fortnite. But I don't really care for Fortnite. I tried to play it, and the mechanics just don't speak to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it seems a little bit bizarre that you're, like, building, like, a tower in the middle, like, while you're in this Hunger Games experience. Like, okay. But I like PUBG. However, PUBG on consoles has consistently not gotten better. Like, I'm on an Xbox One X, and I'm in the mid-20 frame rates, and before, it would be a few months ago, there was an issue where when another player was near you, the frame rate would drop. And so it was like a dead giveaway that someone was nearby you. So I don't have a PC that's just like a screamer. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll try this mode because it is 60 frames a second, 100 man on an island, and while I understand that it's derivative, it's a copycat thing, the guys that make Call of Duty know how to make a shooter. And they said, we're going to make this, and we're going to make it function on a console and play great. And it does all those things. It is a blast. I am terrible at it. There have been people that have been playing it for a month. But I've had so much fun dropping onto this island and, you know, scavenging weapons, getting into gunfights, you know, all the stuff that's inherent within these kind of things. It's great. It is great. And it, like, I paid $30 for PUBG. I basically paid $40 to just play this mode. There's no campaign, which is ridiculous to me, in a Call of Duty. So I guess I'm part of the problem now. But yeah. I just keep playing this mode. Like, I played it compulsively, like, for a whole morning. I was just, okay, next match, next match, next match. And it's a little more up-tempo than PUBG, because PUBG matches tend to be, like, if you're in it to win it, it's, like, 30 to 45 minutes, and these are, like, 15 minutes. And, man, you just go. It's great. It's great fun. So
that's awesome. I'm actually really intrigued. I'm bummed that Battlefield doesn't have a mode like this. I'm really bummed that you didn't choose Battlefield and at least attempt to play with me once, because you don't have PlayStation. Yeah, it would never work.
So, like, Battlefield has said that they're going to do a mode like this that's a battle royale, but it's, you got to have a squad of four. So there's no solos, there's no pairs. It's got to be four, which is fine. I'm not opposed to that, but it's not out yet. And I'm interested to see when that mode comes out for you to try it and kind of get the vibe of this style of game, Cameron, because I really want that for you. But yeah, PUBG apparently is out on PS4. Like,
yeah, you know. It's there. I don't know. I can't bring myself to play it, I guess, even though I'm curious, but I just know it's going to run really, really poorly.
Yeah, you shouldn't, because it will. Because it will. And lastly, I've just been hitting Eternal a ton. Been drafted, because I guess their plan is to just release sets when Magic is not releasing sets, which is probably the best idea.
Yeah.
And their new set, I've actually been drafting it, and I think it's a ton of fun. So if you've been away from Eternal or you're looking to try it out, now's a very, very good time. So, all right. That's all I got, Cameron. If someone would like to get in touch with you and talk to you about why you should be playing PUBG or Call of Duty Blackout, where could they find you?
Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And if you have suggestions for how I could not be such a horrible noob, I'm @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.